Hello and welcome to Imp's Adventures Podcast on the Social Suplex Podcast Network. Help the network out by leaving us a 5-star review, give a donation directly through Red Circle, and become one of the amazing community by joining the Social Suplex Discord. Link is in the description. Read the Social Suplex newsletter. Shout out to Trish and Tim, as always, and to every person who's contributed so far. Listen to the other top-notch shows here on the Social Suplex Podcast Network, One Nation Radio, Keeping It Strong Style, All Things Elite, Wrestling Art with Chris Things, Trish and Sarah, Tunnel Talk, Sam Brown's AEW Match Guide, and Joshiing around. My name is Matt Mayer, aka Imp, and this is your quick look back at the AEW week that was. 30 minutes of a show in absolute peak and continuous form. Last week we had the AEW Grand Slam, which is like a mini pay-per-view type thing, but on the telly box and whatnot, so like a pay-per-view but not really a pay-per-view, so it was a special built up to. We got loads of those back in the day, but this time we used the collision slot to work for it. And now everything off of that is spinning towards Revolution, and it's just all going at such a great pace. Every single week, if things are just building and things are just, every single segment feels important, there's no filler at all. It's like there's really not that much filler. Apart from the fact that on Collision, they will literally say, this match is filler. This is a stand-in match to fill time. Oh, okay. Like it's a jobber match. It's almost like they're trying to rebrand the jobber matches, but they're rebranding them as filler. That was literally on hold in case filler was needed. It's an interesting theory to try and promote it. Personally, there's nothing wrong with a, you know, bigger person beating the shit out of a smaller person. Like in wrestling, that's absolutely fine. You don't need to brand it differently. It's all right. But anyway, this was the week that was the fallout of AEW Grand Slam and redirecting us towards Revolution. And they did it for me in a really strong way. There were definitely talking points. Fair to say, this week gave us quite a few talking points. But I feel like things were all moving in such a purposeful direction, and they're juggling all like six plates of their, I don't know, I call it SmackDown 6, but it's also like the like WWF in 2000, where they just had all of these names hovering around the main event title scene, and they just swapped them out and interchanged them, and they all had storylines at all times. Like these are the six most important people, and you rotate them about. But then also you have a really strong undercard. I think that's where I'm kind of like, SmackDown 6 isn't quite right, because there's stuff underneath that's also happening. Like, when do we bring up Kyle Fletcher, Kazuchika Okada, Konosuke Takeshita? Like, they don't factor into these top six guys, but they're very very much right there already. So like, yeah, the show is just super important. John bloody Moxley, he doesn't factor in. He's doing his own thing at the moment. Really, just a really strong product right now. And maybe what we saw with Collision, because Collision sold over 3,000 tickets this week. They only did that once in 2025, and they've already done it here in February. So is that a sign? Is that a mini sign that the product is being as strong as it is for the amount of time that it is it starting to show little dividends like that? I'm not talking anything crazy, like back to like 10,000 arenas or anything like that. We're not talking that. But are things on the way back up rather than back down? And at the moment, that momentum feels really positively in AEW's direction. Anyway, this week we were live in Sacramento, California for AEW Dynamite. A little plug as well for Rich Latta's video he put up on YouTube, because he spent the day on Wednesday with Swerve, and he made a great little video posted about it. So if you want to go to his YouTube channel, pretty certainly he would have linked it in the One Nation Radio and in the Discord and all that stuff. So if you want a little behind the scenes of what happened, maybe not super, you know what I mean, blog, that's the word I'm looking for, Jesus Christ. I'm off the era of blogs, I should have found that word quicker. Anyway, Dynamite live from Sacramento, California. All four TBS Championship women, as well as Swerve and Kenny, they all got weed to camera bits to start the show. Then into Orange Cassidy choosing Tomohiro Ishii as his Roddy replacement for the tag against the Badlands later in the show. So let's jump straight to it. I really do like the talking to camera beginnings when they're done quick enough. If somebody starts to monologue a bit, I'm going to tune out. I think that's the thing that you kind of need to be a bit aware of when you're doing these beginning of the show stuff. Swerve nailed it. Single line, shows his intent, done. But not every character is going to be in that intensity, or like Swerve's character isn't always going to be in that level going into every single week, but it's perfect for this week. But if you do start to rabbit on a little bit, like if you're even getting close to a paragraph, you need to start trimming it down. Don't want to hear your life story. I don't want to hear a build up or your day building up to the event. I just want to hear something like, Darby Allin, I'm going to punch you in the face. Cool, next person. One line. I don't need anything more than that. And speaking of a very clear basic intent, the Continental Championship Eliminator match that started us off, John Moxley versus Mark Davies. Let's play a clip for the match before we jump on in.
Well, perhaps Davis is who's now looking for the pile driver, but instead Moxley, oh, Bulldog flings him out center of the ring. The Bulldog's in tight. Davis is faded and he taps.
A big boy out to bash and batter Mox. Excalibur's reminder of Mox's involvement in Davies and Doyle's tag title match was partly responsible for their loss. So in wrestling hindsight booking terms, that means Mox's involvement was entirely responsible for their loss. Danielson was disappointed that Bold Wheeler Yuta didn't go out to. They're holding off on that pop masterfully. I love it. Hefty chops and strikes brawl and bruises off, escalating into your more German suplexy watchmajigs. Very much for Davies bringing back that Rikishi slaps his thighs and sits on you spot. Totally a sucker for that spot. Danielson afterwards like, Mark Davies is a big boy. I think they've seen the social media posts. I don't know about Twitter, but Blue Sky is very horny for Big Dunk. Hype after a dive into the barricade, Davies was set for it after a missed punch into the ringside post drew Aussie blood. Mox immediately in like a shark, like, get me some of that. A little nibble before talking the fingers and quickly realising they could just do hand stuff through the ad break. I said what I said. When we returned, there was no chest home for Davies to sit on. John striking off the man's hurty bum bum. The 10 minutes remaining call reminded us of Saturday's draw. And yes, the gut wrench pile driver is just a part of Mark Davies' move list now. I love that in his style of, I'm just in any way going to hoist you up and hit a thing. But I feel like the gut wrench pile driver is absolutely perfect vibe for Mark Davies' style. Because even though it is clean, it doesn't feel it. It feels like he's just hoisted a lad up and dropped him. It's not the elaborate performative holding them in the correct pose and position before hitting the move. It's like a hoisting a sack of potatoes and dunks them. It's like, yes, I absolutely adore it for Mark Davies. Production made sure to just keep getting shots of Davies' bloody hand as it began to swell. Or at least Danielson said, look, it's beginning to swell. And I believed him because he's such a good commentator. And it played somewhat into the finish as Dunk was unable to swing quite as focused as he normally would, giving Mox that second to snap in and flip him over into a bulldog choke submission win. Lovely little bout to start us off. And I like that Mark Davies hasn't like sunk in the background whilst he and another tag partner unfortunate injury. Which is just good to see that he is getting that momentum. They are flowing with it. And he's getting over. Like, good for him. With everything that happened, they're like, oh, was he just going to be a little bit forgotten with all the focus of Kyle Fletcher? Like, no, they've found a place for him. On to the other notes from Dynamite. A promo video from Brody filmed in the Aussie medical room got a loud fuck ice chant. He and Bandido will both bounce back. Fair to say AEW have really got something here. An obvious statement, I know, but they really do have something. Brody will have his first match since Australia on Dynamite next week. So we'll see how the reaction works. Like, has he been properly elevated by all of this? My gut reaction is yes. You can put him in those six. Like, he's that guy who slots in and becomes the newer face of those guys. Technically, like, Andrade's not had like a super strong AEW footing, but he feels more established already in that higher pecking order because of what he did previously. Like, it's enough for me to believe him in that top spot again without too much character work. Brody King feels like all the character work has done it. It's done the job. It's worked. Like, you can just slot him in now. But let's not overlook Bandido. I feel like it's something because of everything that's happened with Brody King with his run to MJF. I thought Bandido's build up to MJF's match was also brilliant. Then things outside of their control then fed into the hype for Brody King, and that just wasn't just good TV booking of a strong character, of a strong wrestler. That was, oh shit, no, there's something in the air, in the zeitgeist here. You could strike on something. So something tells me he might get quite the reaction on next week's Dynamite. Death Riders had a Wii to camera promo run. Yuta wearing both a beanie and his hood up, like he's not giving you anything. Pac and Garcia laid out another challenge to the Don Callis lads. Mox isn't walking away from the Takeshita fight either. Challenge to a no time limit match at Revolution. Yes. Yes. What they did at the Aussie match absolutely perfectly sets this up. The audience are just right there with them in anticipation, just really wanting to see how the match will actually go. My only negative is I had said, oh, I hope they've got something more than just giving us the Don Callis versus Death Rider multi-lad tag matches every week. Aside from Aussie Grand Slam, that is all they've got. I'm a little bit disappointed. To be fair, this week's one on Collision was one of my favourite. I was definitely souring on it last week, like I'd seen enough of them. But this week, oh, I'm back in. I really enjoyed this week's. But same comment. Really like what they did with Aussie Grand Slam to set this up. I felt the vibes for it going in, but you know, doing the thing you expect isn't always a bad idea. I like where this is going. Like, you're teasing that you're going to put on a great wrestling match, and then you tell me you're going to put on a great wrestling match with a no time limit, so it's going to go for a certain amount of time. Guaranteed. Otherwise, why are you doing this whole build for it? That is a very clever way to get me interested in a wrestling pay-per-view. Would have been nice, though, you know, to maybe have something more than just multi-lad matches guarding it the whole time. At least John Moxley has done his Continental Classic dial matches, continuing with the title. That's been nice to just remind you of what the vibe of the title matches are going to be like. But we are still getting the Don Callis multi-lad matches every week. Speaking of Don Callis family, they accepted the Collision Challenge, beating up staff backstage. Don told us that Takeshita's not here. When Okada then walked in, Kyle's my best friend. I wish to be here with him, but I've showed up to work to do my job, unlike Takeshita. Introduce Andrade, who was dressed like a Guy Ritchie mob boss, to let us know he's still focused on the AEW Championship. More on that in Collision. Hook with another Takeshita video confirmed the ops are recruiting. Shibata's in Japan and he's here, both looking for the best. Honestly, at the moment, this feels kind of cold. I'll see what they come up with, because at the moment they're teasing that they're coming up with something, but my gut reaction for this period with Hook at the top of the ops, it feels kind of cold, which is kind of a shame, because with the whole Samoa Joe thing, it felt like they had found a great way to just reinvigorate his character again, which I wasn't expecting, but I love the way it mirrored the Revolution stuff with Swerve and Hangman previously. Thought it fed into their stuff really well. But because he's not the main character or focus, even though he had the championship, the whole point was to give something for Swerve and Hangman, and it's bounced off into this like six top lads thing so well. Samoa Joe's not part of that. So where does he obviously factor in. And then, of course, Will Hobbs has gone over to WWE. So the ops need to restructure. So at the moment, no Joe, no Hobbs. It feels kind of cold, but we'll see. Who does he recruit? What's the actual image for it? Do they have the same vibe, or are we going for something different? Like, what's the actual plan for what the ops is going to look like? Because at the moment, not super excited. Not going to lie. It's not got me super excited. But when Hook came up, I was like, oh yeah, that's happening, isn't it? End of emotion. This here is the most I've thought about it. That's not talking. It's like, obviously, I'm not going to do like a big reaction bit. Oh, this is rubbish. I need to just move on. I was like, I don't know what they're doing. I don't know who they're bringing in. I mean, the vibes don't feel amazing. But, you know, if the vibes are exactly that afterwards, I'll have you voice it. But at the moment, yeah, you know, feels kind of cold. We'll see. Renee introduced two former AEW women's champions backstage, Chris Statlander and Thunder Rosa. The latter clear today, but the former not able to wrestle yet. So Rosa challenged Tekla to a match on her behalf, and we got a return match for her on Collision. Another Will Ospreay video play, this time focused on the competitive edge of his character. This isn't where the best wrestle, it's where the Billy Goat wrestles. Some things in wrestling are meant to be taken super seriously, and then you read the sentence out loud, and it's, this is where the Billy Goat wrestles. It's like, yeah, wrestling's weird sometimes. Sometimes you say a ludicrous thing, and it's treated as, this is serious, this is emotional. It's like, no, that's not a serious sentence, surely. The Demand made a challenge for the Trios title. Tara very empty challenge the Jetspeed lads, turned to their locker room to find a Jack Perry knife in the door. Ricochet like, ah, a knife. What a humorous jape. And what a humorous jape it was. For we will get to it. FTR. The Boo Baddies, not on the run sheet, but they're the tag champions, so they'll do as they please, damn it. A wee segment trying to convince us another FTR Young Bucks bout is necessary, actually. Come on then, sell it to me, fellas. I'm ready for the hard sell. FTR and Stoke hit on Matt and Nick, just being the second best tag team again. The line that they set up last week. Stoke specifically ran on the Jacksons' goodness, calling out their fakeness given what they were doing just this time last year. Called the Jackson children running around backstage like domestic terrorists, which worked so well to make me believe Dax and Cash really did think the crowd reaction was because of that line, and not because the Bucks were stood behind them winding up a superkick. And Stoke continuing to talk, not realising it's happened. Also great. It's the fact he said that line right when the Bucks got into the ring, so the pop from the crowd could so easily have been believed as, oh, they're reacting to my line, aren't I good? I've said a joke. But God was I happy this is a quick and simple segment and not a promo battle. Stoke continued his promo for a moment before realising who was behind him, held off on superkicking the man again, this time announcing they'll be going for the titles at Revolution. I feel like if they had got into the ring and tried to emotionally sell me with their words about why this match was necessary and all the same emotions they got by doing the actions, I would have bounced right off of this. Because they did it so quickly, just kick them in the face, said we're coming for the titles at Revolution, move on. Absolutely, yes. This is what this should be. If you are doing this again, you don't need to try and sell me on the purpose of it. You can just be blunt about it. Like, yeah, we're doing it, cool, let's go. And everything here sets up what happens on Collision, so we'll get to that when we get to Collision, including the line about your kids are running around backstage like domestic terrorists. Like, that line comes in as well. Said kids, oh, they're ringside. Oh, I bet FDR took that well. The four-way for the TBS Championship: Willow Nightingale, Megan Bain, Marina Shafir, and Mina Shirakawa. A wee fun four-way kerfuffle. Bain and Shafir made good work on their past teamings for a tad, making Mina and Willow work together too, but TBS title times meant that didn't last past the break too long. Big Bane with a really impressive head scissors for her size, flipped Willow off the top, Shafir's tiger feint to chop the head and drive into the mat, not quite as impressive. We got the women to the outside for Big Meg to toss Mina out onto them though, so, you know, did its purpose. Plenty of multi-person spots in the second half, including our first meet chant for women's matches when Willow and Megan ran at each other. Bane, the only lass left in the ring, dove on out and got our first This Is Awesome of the night. This was where Bane and Shafir fully broke down, brawling around ringside till Megan powerbombed her onto the no-breaky announce desk. A huge avalanche German suplex from Willow tossed Bane overhead to a great reaction from the crowd. Mina tried to take advantage and hit her fancy strikes on champion, wound up in the figure four only to get cradled up and pinned for Willow's survival. An entertaining enough little TBS title defense reminds you of Mina's, you know, existence. Tony Storm now busy with the Orange Cassidy stuff, and Mina then dragged about as the love interest to be hit for the baddies to get some heat. But the other stuff was more reminding you of the dance within the tag division as well. On Collision, Willow and Harley's promo kind of just hitting on the fact, like, which belt do you want? Do you want this belt? Do you want that belt? Do you want this belt? Like, it's a lot for Willow to defend right now, and I do really like when a champion vividly gets worn out. Like, you start to see it in their character. I was a really big fan of Darby Allin's Flash TNT title run in the Samoa Joe kind of era of that title, where he picks it up for like a month, or I can't remember how, it was a really short amount of time, but he went hard. He was defending it all the time in like knackering matches. He went to Japan. He was just absolutely exhausting himself. So when he dropped it relatively quickly, you're like, yeah, he's not holding it long, but he's a broken boy. Like, he needs to sleep. Right, and on to one of the biggest talking points of this week, MJF and Hangman Page. A great promo segment, but also, oh no, the Cody I'll never challenge again stipulation rears its head after 5.5 years. A real test to my, there's no such thing as as thing equals bad, just thing done badly. Writing philosophy. Like, we'll get to it. MJF made it plain that he hates hangers, the cowboy shit chants, and the fact he gets called the main character of AEW when it's clearly me. Promised to end the myth that is Hangman Page at Revolution. Hangers also plain and simple with his statement. He also hates MJF. Twice now he's beating the shit out of that guy. He doesn't like how Max won the title, collected the spoils of greater men, a great line, and admits he hates the man right back. But he knows that part of his hate is because he's never met a man more like him. That desperate need for love and accolation. They've both always needed it. So the crowd chanted, kiss, kiss. Like, AEW's for the gays. That was really fine. They can lean into it. They can lean into that. It's felt like that chant happened in such a serious segment, and there's such a massive talking point at the end of it, but halfway through it, Hangman Page gives a really strong mirroring point for the characters, and the fans are like, oh, kiss, please. I just love that as their gut reaction. You're the same. You can have friendship. Oh, AEW crowd. You naive things. Like, oh, they've got a similarity. They can get on. Page amped himself up into suggesting the crowd should decide the stipulation. Max had none of it. I'm hearing chants of Texas death. If you think we're having anything other than a normal wrestling match, then you're out of your damn mind. So what did Hangers offer? He gave his word that if he loses, he'll never challenge for the AEW championship ever again. The way that played out felt so purposely playing off the reaction to when Cody said it. And the fact Cody did lose. So your gut reaction when we're watching it is like, oh no, last time this happened, that was bad. It was very constricting character writing wise as well. Booking wise, it was a constriction that just wasn't necessary. It's why I like it a little bit more. It's more like, whilst you're champion, I'll never challenge you for the belt again. I don't mind those stipulations because that does hurt the character and it could be like a short term real holdback. But to never challenge it again, like, you don't know what the situation is going to be in like 3 years time. Like, you might suddenly need a snap person to jump in, but because you've given this stipulation. Max seemed to like the offer, but wanted a week to accept Hedy's stipulation or come up with his stipulation. I'm a little confused on what it is. Are they both coming up with a stipulation each? I think that was what it was. So Max is taking his time to come up with his rather than in the moment off of the emotion of Hangers giving out his. I think that's what they were building to. Hangers not the same though. He's already made up his mind. Hangman Page, MJF, Revolution, Texas Death. Like, hey, a nice little neat 5-word poem. But yeah, it's fair to say the reaction to this has been mixed. I feel like there's a good reaction of, oh no, not the Cody thing. That was a very bad idea, which long term did hurt them, the fact that he could never go for it, especially when he was such a hot character at the time, and the fact that he would never be the top. It was a very odd decision. So the fact that they could do that to another character is like, oh, do they think it's a good idea that was then just done badly? Because that again, my philosophy when it comes to writing. But you need to have such control over what happens next if you're doing that. So you could do this well as much as you like, and you can even follow it through for a little while as well as you like. But come 3 years later, right now you don't have control of that creatively. You have no idea what world you're going to be in that amount of time later. You can maybe control one or two things. Like the story of the initial champions of AEW and then Hangman Page beats Kenny Omega. That was like a multi-year long story which they slowly built to. You can have a plan for that, but you don't know exactly how it's going to be able to play out when you started doing it. Like the birth of AEW, they didn't have a direct plan. Like that's why for me it's a bit of a holding back. When Cody initially did it at the start of AEW, it then became a kind of a problem. The fact that he could never like integrate into that world title picture. So when that stipulation is brought up again, there are wholly negative reactions. And my gut instinct was more like, well, if you're bringing it up now, you want me to have that negative reaction to it. But I guess they wanted it to be more like, no, Hangman, don't do that, Hangman. Hangman, no. I guess you wanted it to be more like that, rather than questioning the creative choice to do it, which it feels like a lot more the reaction has been. I'm not in the camp of, oh, rewrite it, redo it, whatever. Max is going to give his stipulation midweek, so you do have an out there. You could do that there. But I would be more in kind of, you had a reason for doing it when you said it on Wednesday. Stick by your guns. Show me why you chose to do this. No, if I think it's shit afterwards, I'd be like, ugh. But like right now, I'm like, it feels like they're giving me those emotions on purpose. This Saturday, watching the Collision match, when you visually get to see Hangman Page in a situation where you'd be like, oh no, they've lost the match. I'm about to see Hangman getting pinned. But that doesn't happen. Instead, he's able to kick out. And because of the multiple men and interferences, he's able to get the win. But I really like that in terms of, you know, his title career is going to be on the line when he faces MJF. What happens when he's in that scenario and there is no interference to save him that time? Like, I really liked how Collision then set up the emotion you're meant to be feeling in the match when he gets to Revolution. Like, all of the notes have already been put down. I can see where they're going to be going with it. But I mean that in terms of during the match, what emotions are they going to try and get out of us? Why they're doing those emotions, that bit I don't know. And that's why I'm a little bit like, are you going to actually put the title on Hangman? And that's where my comparison to SmackDown 2000 comes in. That's where I'm like, oh wait, no, this isn't SmackDown 6. This isn't like you got six guys going for it, but it's really just Kurt Angle stays champion, even they got all these different lads. In WWF 2000, they had all of these guys swapping the belt. I think The Rock holds it for Oh, God, it's a long time ago. Why did I do this to myself? He held it for a certain amount of time. He drops it to Kurt Angle. He drops it back to The Rock. And then you go into WrestleMania or Rock versus Austin. It's a little bit messy. But when you got those six lads on the wall dancing around the world title picture, giving each of them like a few months with the title, that is all right. That is fine. And if you are going to do the stipulation, just in terms of your basic list of three, you have one where the person who said it then lost and it didn't quite work out. This time, what if the person says it and they win? So instead of doing a do-over, essentially, of being like, oh no, this idea can work, for me personally, probably would be better if Hangman does win. And I don't think that's the end of the world for MJF, because he's in with this huge group that are going to stay around the top and be dancing around this. MJF is already making other enemies and things around this title picture. There's a great road set for MJF, but the more it's playing out, I'm like, well, because I did the flight of fancy of, okay, what happens if Hangers win? Because I did the same for Brody King. What happens there? But then the match more played out being like, oh, you can integrate Brody King into this lot of people rather than have this be a crowning moment. He can just be established guy within these six. You continue to make him feel important rather than just giving him the title. You continue that. But with the road all laid out, if someone else then wins the championship, like, that's fine. I think that's fine. When you're elevating all of these people around them, you can hot potato the title a little bit. And by hot potato, I mean more of a modern day, a few months reign. I don't mean like the crazy stuff we'd get in the 90s. That's a literal hot potato. Crazy stuff. I mean, look at it now. You're like, what do you mean they held it for like a week or two constantly? That's crazy. But because I don't know why they've given us those emotions, because it felt so purposeful that they were trying to get those emotions from us. That gut negative reaction. Then you start to feel those emotions during the matches. So why are you doing it? Like, personally, I think it's because I'm also getting excited for this like big group of people around the title. I think it would be a bit of a mistake to take one of them out of it all of a sudden. Like, what's Hangman going to do if he can't go for that title, given all the people he's feuding with are hot for that title? So what becomes his purpose then? Is he just going to like hinder other people as he lashes out? Like, what's the plan here? That's why I'm like, you're going to have to convince me over these next couple of weeks that there's a world where Hangman could work outside of this and it'd be fine. But that's going to be more difficult. My world is suddenly like, well, Hangman's got to win. That doesn't mean that you should swerve me and have MJF win. It's like, no, Hangman can win, but the road that would look like it was going to be set for MJF then becomes the road set for Hangman. Suddenly I'm like, oh, then you got Swerve's turn. That becomes even like more exciting if you change the champion during this run while Swerve's kind of establishing this new character. So I'm not having an immediate, oh, this is a really bad idea to do this reaction. I am a bit wary of the thing that didn't work before, try it again. It's like, because I do believe it is a thing done badly, but this is an incredibly difficult thing to do correctly. There is a difficulty level. Like the gymnastics at the Olympics, they're going for a very, very difficult technique and dance. It's like, oh, you're going to try and pull off the I'll never challenge ever again type of thing. Oh, it's really difficult to keep momentum for that character. You can try, and they have to keep coming up with stuff for Cody. Eventually, he just drifted off on his island. So really, it's just more like, wider picture-wise, it doesn't make a lot of sense for Hammond to be removed from this world title picture just because they're all forming it at the moment, and it feels like the road's being built really solidly. But they are at least already, through that collision match, they are showing me the emotions they're planning to be taking up on. They're planning to play us with on Revolution. So the match itself feels like it's going to be really dramatic in like a really good way. It's just, what do they have planned character-wise for the next bit? Why are you doing it? Because all I can see is that they're doing it. I don't know why. I don't know the next bit. I'm not going to be able to predict the whole feud. It feels very odd. It feels very odd. Anyway, I don't normally rabbit it on this much about a certain topic. So let's go on to the next bit. The conglomeration, Orange Cassidy and Tomohiro Ishii versus Gabe Kidd and Clark Connors, the dogs, woof woof. Kidd and Connors are such a perfect opposite for Orange Cassidy's antics. A little chuckle at Ishii chopping Clark, then Cassidy did his soft touch and got the louder reaction. Watching this man now, and I now and then remember the backlash to him getting hired, and I just laugh. At what was a clear rubbish take at the time. Never mind how bad it looks now. More meat for Gabe and Big Tom's strong style, charge and chop battle. The crowd really got into this when those two were battling in the ring. Kidd and Connors didn't get the best reaction when they came out, but Sacramento, they came alive during the actual match. And right then, Ishii's right hip or quad or hamstring just completely gave up under him. Sucked the air out of the match, unfortunately, but the now experienced Orange Cassidy just broke through and brought that life back with his dives. Gabe and Cassidy ringside with the Orange Man draped over the barricade when Darby Allin made his return with a pipe, brawled away with the Nottinghamshire Dog back into the ring, and the injured Ishii somehow fought back to finish the match. Orange punch to Connors, brainbuster for the win. Ishii could hardly walk, having to be assisted out. How he finished, like, I've got no idea. Hopefully it's not too bad. Apparently that was the word coming out afterwards. Like, there's a big worry that he'd done something serious there, but it turns out it's not that bad. Or at least that's what the thought is the last time I saw it. Next match was the Brawling Birds versus Jobby Jobs, Becker and Viva Van. A quick little establishing bout for our new women's tag act. AEW style with the jobbers allowed a wee bit of offense. Irish curse backbreaker from Hater, lariat from Windsor, then a double charging lariat, and just to finish things off, a heart attack style lariat. The Brawling Birds get their few little moves established. Not really much else to say. Just a how do you guys feel about these? The The penultimate match of the night was Kevin Knight versus The Beast Mortos. Voted Wrestling Observer's most underrated wrestler, now officially with his law degree, it was time to put Kevin Knight over. No surprise this was solid. Both lads got to show off their strength and flippy doos, with Mortos getting pops for everything, given he's been off TV for a minute and we all have such short, nothing memories. A showcase match for Kevin, but Mr. Mortos got bigger and bigger reactions as the match went on. Knight impressively lifted The Beast up and slammed him down. Chants of Lucha, Lucha, as the Jetspeed Man found his flow. Just a constant reaction of noise for Kevin's momentum of moves to win. A wee smile on the top rope in recognition of it before hitting the UFO to win. Yes, more Kevin Knight. Totally for it. And the main event. So here we go with the other talking point. Swerve Strickland versus Kenny Omega. Bloody hell. With a clearly signalled, but we love him, so ignored the signs, heel baddie turn from Swerve. A fact that bubbled so well over the match, instead of like, bam, I'm a baddie now, sudden switch. Both men were amped from the start, which yes did result in Kenny whirling a barricade protective pad over his head after they cut to the ads. That pad did not play ball with Kenny's pop-up to the moonsault, so it got what it deserved. Really funny if you watch Aubrey at that point where she's just ducking each time that Kenny starts swinging it around. We got treated to a Kenny flow once we returned. How lovely. Always a delight. Plus we got to see Swerve get frustrated at not getting a shot on the man for a decent stretch. Swerve eventually woke up, backbreaking and dropkicking the Canadian to the apron. Talked over with a mean mug on his face and just hit the man's face into the turnbuckle pads again and again. Sacramento too busy chanting fight forever to react to that. Like, the signs are there, guys. He's got a mean look on his face and he's slamming Kenny Omega's face into the turnbuckles over and over again, but you're too busy going, this is awesome, to notice he's doing it. Just, don't worry. The desired response correctly was found via teasing a vertebraker onto the apron. Like, yep, that'd do it. But they were just teasing the signs at that point. As Kenny evaded pain and hit a snapdragon to then tease hitting one off the apron, he also said he was going to bring the violence, but you know, the signs were there. Us at TV at home, we obviously got like a much closer right up in there shot of it, so we were way more aware of it. But I like that. I like that all the signs were there. Swerve stopped that crazy snapdragon off the apron from happening, both lads having now teased going a tad far. Then Kenny actually went for it. Swerve landed on his feet and immediately rolled through to suplex the poor lad onto the mats. Back in the ring for 450 fun times, a fancy light up to shift into the next gear, and for Kenny again to do the dragon suplex from a height. This time nailed it with Swerve flipping over and landing on his face, like Jesus. Jesus, Swerve, you crazy man taking that. And our first front and centre villainous note, Swerve telling Ref Aubrey that he might have separated his shoulder as Kenny amped up the V-trigger, and Strickland pulled Aubrey in front of him to take the shot. More blatant to us than the live crowd, but don't worry, they made sure it was properly clear later on. Kenny tried to flow into the one-winged angel, but Swerve took advantage of the slight distraction to completely flow over Omega. House call, Swerve stomp on the apron, then back in the ring, wide-eyed for Kenny's kick out as the crowd started to boo. Sacramento properly behind Kenny for the final run. Dragon suplex, reverse Rana, but no angel. Such a great back and forth run. Swerve got to snap in and cut off Kenny too, only fair. V-trigger charge met with a house call out of nowhere. Big pressure, 1-2-3. Being willing to go that step further got him the win, but this was something a tad more. Then he hit Kenny after the bell. Ref number two tossed away. Kenny over the top rope with the chain around his neck. Danielson on commentary calling, Swerve, you're better than this. In a prelude to the fact that he is going to do this. Steel steps by the cleared and outs desk and a vertebraker through it. Shouting to the camera, I needed this. I needed this as we went off air. Yes. Such a really well done character switch. But it's not like it all happened on the one night. You've got to just see that more serious side to Swerve bubbling and building since he's returned. And this was like his night where he didn't snap on this night. He had already snapped. And maybe you can see it in a past promo where maybe he gives Kenny Omega a look or something. But I did like how rather than a switch flicking in this match, it just bubbled so naturally and Swerve just got more and more amped up, more and more willing to go that extra mile and deliver that violence to a point where for the live crowd, he's going too far. But I really like that there are flashes of him going too far during the match anyway before he goes really far with the vertebraker stuff. Like Kenny Omega tried to hit a dragon suplex off the apron. Like, is he the good guy? There's little lines you can use for it, but I feel like what it's just for Swerve's character is so interesting, especially in the current realm of those people going for the titles. Swerve as a bad guy in that mix works really well for me. There's just so much interesting things that you can do with Swerve in this character in that field. Be it dancing with Hangman, with Brody King, with Kenny still. There's a lot you can do. Also, it's an incredible match. Let's not forget that. That was an all-timer ending to Dynamite. Really, really strong match with really great character work within there. I'm assuming critically praised, commercially praised. Like everybody loving it. So anyway, really, really strong Dynamite, really strong main event. Everything was important, everything flowed. And then we get on to Collision. After Dynamite put us towards Revolution, how did Collision then do? Well, you know, it's Collision. You get some good wrestling. Not always that super important to watch, but I mean, I really enjoyed Collision this week. Sometimes it takes a little moment for the show to grow on me. Nah, not this week. And a more than decent crowd, as I said earlier, over 3,000, which Collision only did once last year. So it's nice to see Collision doing that. Because immediately I was like, Collision? 3,000 for Collision? collision. I think they did it twice last year, and one of those was the UK show in Cardiff, so does it really count? Like, this is a, like, oh right, yeah, this isn't even like a super special collision, it's just an episode of Collision, and they did really well. So anyway, let's jump on over, starting with the AEW Trios Championship, Jet Speed Rodeo defending against The Demand.
To lose it, well, here comes the Butch, Sean Lariat! Both barrels, 1, 2, 3!
Time to edit out more horsecock chants. That's someone's weekly job. I've got a sound engineering degree, they say, whilst then just going back in. Replacing the audio. Out goes the horsecock. The match started off with more bold for Dickhead Richard, though, right before the baddies ignited their stompy, stompy, stomp. Our equine members got their fast teamwork flow, all fancy in their matching racing gear. The Gates of Agony Big Boy ringside beating was so good. Bishop just whipped speedboard between apron and barricade like, well, a ball, whilst Toa charged around, shouldering lads to their backs. The fast ending momentum of big offense, so much fun as always in these AEW Trios parties. Very much enjoyed Khan's pedigree turned driver that Bailey twisted in the bump for to land on his head. The baddies had the run of it after the flash fun, giving us the visual of Hangers getting pinned after a big move with his teammates held back, but he kicked out and survived. Are you giving us that sight for a reason, Tony? No follow-up Spirit Gun though, with Jungle Boy returning to distract with his entrance and stage pose. Wrestling is at times very much the vibes of a fashion show. Buckshot off the distraction and the champions retained, and immediately the question in my mind is, okay, Hangers looked like he could have been outdefeated, he survived, Ricochet was amping up for the Spirit Gun, but then distraction happens. So what happens in the MGF match when none of that happens? What happens if Hangman is taken down? That moment does happen, but this time there's going to be nobody to come out and save him. You gave us that emotional feeling of seeing Hangman getting pinned and you think he's going to lose it and then he doesn't. So what happens when you do that same feeling again in the MGF match and you play off of it? So this is what I mean, kind of just like, I'm not going to be wholly negative because they're already telling me they're going to be playing certain notes. They're already setting me up for it. The thing itself might be fun to watch, but I think it might be the aftermath where I'm a bit more like, they're not sure, Chief. Onto the other notes, because it is Collision. The Rascals have their first AEW t-shirt to sell. FDR walked on in like disappointed teachers and got hyped into an eliminator match in the main event tonight. Andrade and MGF had an all sweaty in their wrestling underpants chin rag backstage. Friedman wanting to assert himself after Andrade voiced his mission to still go for the AEW championship. Tommaso Ciampa interviewed backstage wearing a dyed blue leather jacket. He's liked the competition since he arrived in AEW, but didn't take too kindly to Fletcher taking the TNT Championship to Australia and then staying in Australia. He still has his eyes on Sylvie, as he calls it. Babes of Wrath backstage with Lexi Nair, hardly just making me laugh again. Which belt do the big ladies want? Buckle up, ladies, as they promise to stand up to whatever the challenge ends up being. A party backstage with the Outrunners, Bang Bang Gang, and Anthony Bowens, hosted by Private Party, all hyped to be back. That very much looked like a party I did not want to be a part of. with loud music and the flashing stuff, and I'm just like, this doesn't look cool. I don't think I'd want to be there. But there is alcohol, and you know, sometimes just doing a basic thing with alcohol becomes fun. that's sometimes kind of how it happens. You can just make it fun. Gabe Kidd and Clark Connors interrupted our commentators to camera talk with microphones of their own. I think this worked really well. Just a quick injection and we were done in a minute. No notes, that's really all you need. Their focus is on Derby, but now they're going to bleed orange dry. And I just like the visual of it, of when somebody goes to the commentators like that and they've got the crowd behind them. I think it's just a sudden injection that's just needed and it just works for me. Because I'm a way bigger fan of this than them coming out down the ramp and giving the same monologue, the same speech. You interrupt the show with them like this. It fits their characters as well that they would do this. Young Bucks versus The Swirl. The parents, wives and kids all ringside in attendance for the Bucks. The Swirl now have Jay Lethal leading with his elder wisdom. A quick video during their entrance establishing that. Pure fast-paced PWG tag fun times from the second one. Flippy dives outside before a superkick party and top rope Buck flight for the advertisements. The Bucks in full flow once we came back. That rope draped double stomp into a powerbomb thing still looks so great every time. Nick Jackson just being Nick Jackson with a top rope jumping Varner to Blake. Doomsday device for Lee Johnson and BTE trigger for the win. Family celebration ringside afterwards. The Jacksons are goodies now, so they have families again. Yay! That's how it works in wrestling. The CMLL World Championship. Claudio Castagnoli versus Josh Alexander. Tony Khan's out in the ring holding a belt again. You know what that means. It's Claudio O'Clock out in his lucha mask to pose in the crowd with his title during his entrance. Two big lads charging at each other, but these two aren't afraid to have a little wrestle too. Enjoy yourself the little dance Claudio did after Alexander's chop was deemed a little weak by the crowd. Chants of Claudio, as, like I said, the man just goes in waves of being properly over. Our ad break leading very Rowan Atkinson with a ring steps whip ended with Claudio going, ah, holding his knee. You very specifically have to have seen Rowan Atkinson's stage performance. His stand-up stuff to be able to have a clue what I'm talking about. Who's Rowan Atkinson? He's Mr. Bean for the Americans. He's done more than that. I'm very specifically referencing referencing his stand-up show. Anyway, the Canadian went for a slide and Castagnoli just caught him in a gut wrench and deadlifted the man from the prone position. Like, bloody hell, Claudio, putting that beauty out in the middle of a collision. Boos to the giant swing getting denied. Lance Archer and Rina Shafir, a unique ringside pairing, as it appeared both equally scared the other off from doing anything. An incredible pop-up uppercut, blocked a DDT and just elevated the bastard up high. Claudio's finish called Archer up onto the apron. Shafir jumped up too to stop him and Claudio just kicked him off. Alexander tried to take advantage, but nay. Giant swing, dropped out of a few rotations, but good enough. Neutralizer for the win. It's a lovely little middle of collision type of match. And at the moment, Claudio feels properly over. So there's suddenly like a whole lot of momentum for it. Megan Bain versus Job Lady Jobs, which was Becca, who was one of the Job Lady Jobs from the Dynamite Tag. Established as a standby match, a recent thing they've been trying to establish. Instead of a planned jobber beating, they're standby in case the time opens up for them. Not much to say. Bain beat the lady up and won with her running Liger Bomb, posed up in the corner making the title belt motion. But for which title belt? Because Willow holds the singles title belt and the tag title belt. Which one does she possibly mean? Death Riders, John Moxley, Pac and Wheeler Yuta versus Konosuke Takeshita, Mark Davies and El Clone of the Don Callis family. Wheeler Yuta wrestling with a hat on, so Takeshita just immediately went for his hat, shouting to the ref, "He can't do that, it's part of my gear." I actually absolutely love this. That should be no surprise to anybody. This is kind of wrestling bollocks that I enjoy. And I saw the footage of him running out of the arena when he got taken off during a house show this week. Just pure cartoon villain, like, ah! Off he belts. And as I said, we've seen these factions wrestling a lot of multi-mans lately, but this was one of my favourite lineups of lads for them. Davey's hand as a weakness established early on. I guess the Death Riders equivalent was Yuta's hat. Mox the Man worked over during the break, got his gritted teeth fight back once on air, powering through to Lariat after getting suplexed by Big Davies. Pac and El Clone the igniting of pace. Not that Pac with anybody didn't slap. The man single-handedly got all three opponents outside and moonsaulted onto all of them. Loved me a stiff forearm spot too. Pac did a wee hop off the top rope and Konosuke had a receipt ready. Mox's double DDT crashed Takeshita, but El Clone popped up and just cracked his neck. It's a once a match ability, and I like that in this match, immediately the Death Riders just hit him with another move and he wasn't invincible to that one. It's like he's part of his character that once per match, if you try and drop him on his head, he can just like move his head at the last second and not take any of it, or just soften the blow so much he can just keep going. But you can then just hit him again because it's only once per match. Yuta with a blind tag to try and take advantage, but then Takeshita tagged in and he found himself in a full strike battle with the man. Raging fire to Wheeler and a death stare out at Shafir and the ringside riders. Bubbled into Mox and Takeshita going chest to chest. A Don Callis family jumped distracted for a second, but when their backs touched, Mox didn't hesitate and just hit the bugger with a paradigm shift. They're doing well to get me excited for Takeshita versus Mox, but also at the same time when I tune into the show and I see a multi-lad match, I am having the reaction of, another one. Like, I'm not excited for these multi-men, but I won't lie, I did have a good time with this one. When I did see it announced before the show, I was like, ugh. But then when I saw them all walking out, and I was like, you know what, I did get a little bit into it. Wasn't super excited beforehand, but actually watching the thing, I had a fun time. Yes, obviously, I love the Wheeler Yuta stuff. That's right up my street. Do some absolute silly bollocks like that. And the fact that they're not going to give it to us for quite some time. Just getting practicing those cartoonish, my hat, kind of reactions. Thunder Rosa versus Julia Hart. Thunder Rosa finally cleared to be back, also with members of her family at ringside, wearing a coat proudly displaying the fact of her being a Mexican immigrant. Gave Julia a couple chest chops in front of her kids before shouting about the 619 area code whilst charging around at the last. Maddie Hart got her booze during the ad break, but it's all Thunder Rosa back on air though. Her corner dropkick still looks as awesome as always. I kind of lie because Hart got her spider tarantula in the ropes, then octopus wrapping times in the centre of the ring. Rosa powered out though and also got the legs up to meet the moonsault. Fire Thunder Driver for the win, a package spin out thing if you don't remember what it is. And then the best bit of the segment for me, Tekla in the crowd, took the piss, looking good with her AEW Women's Championship and white fur sleeves. Called Rosa one of the stupidest bitches alive. You come back and the first fight you pick is with me. Chris Statlander then ran on out to block Julia Hart's baddie jump. So it appears we're going to get a very quick Rosa versus Tekla feud before them stat Tekla again. And the main event, the AEW Tag Team Championship Eliminator, FTR versus The Rascals. Basic question what the main event was before the backstage meeting between these two. You know, sometimes just don't think about it. Just don't think about it. You have got a main event, so what does it matter? Tony Khan again put faith in a new actor main event this Saturday show, wasting no time putting Ciampa in one and now Vince and Xavier's two. A wrestling promotion, pushing and featuring new talent, crazy idea. Like, sure, you can not count Ciampa possibly, given how long he's been a featured guy on TV. We can't really say the same exactly for the Rascals. All recovered fine after their parking up brawl win 2 weeks back. During the ad break, FDR chopped a Rascal in front of the Bucks' kids. Villainy! The Rascals' innovative and FDR devious wrestling chappies led to some fun little spots, like Cash holding Dax's arms to prevent a roll-up, then Vince hops over onto said arms and Xavier got his roll-up. Also, Xavier dodging a Wheeler push by hitting his shooting star at a sideways angle off the top before he's properly set for it. Like, really like that spot. And we saw why soon after, as when he decided to take his time and set for it, Cash was right there to push the man onto the ropes. Knees up for the Hot Fire Flame, which is the assisted standing shooting star press thing, and the flow after had Vents kicking out to FTR surprise. Cash was busy taking the piss out of Myron Reed ringside when the Bucks ran out and suddenly Dax was all alone in the ring. Hot Fire Flame and the Rascals actually won. Went off air though with the Gate of Agony delivering a whipping as FTR talked shit to Papa Buck. Stoke, Paragon of Virtue, threw white powder at the family and FTR dragged the brother Buck into the ring for assisted pile driver. Loved Stoke's expression as it was like he realised he was turning full irredeemable villain in that moment. Just such a look on his face as he's being wheelchaired out of there. I just really liked his facials during that. As in, there is no redeeming me now. Kind of thing. But it's Stoke. So there's a slant of humour to it anyway, regardless. He's like, I am now this irredeemable villain. And then the Bucks are just going to super kick him and he'll do a cartoonish fall backwards overhead. Like, that's where we're going with this. But I did say that the tag scene does need some form of injection of something into it. And yeah, this really does help, especially for the road to Revolution. We're not just going to be getting FTR and the Young Bucks interacting with each other. Suddenly, Gates of Agony and the Rascals are just suddenly just injected right in there. It gives something new to us to be seeing on TV, even if we get to the pay-per-view and it is FTR versus the Bucks again. The road there felt different, and that is important for these kind of things. Because like I said last week, you know, you're going to have to convince me that this is necessary. You can't just put it on again, because it feels like the last one was, let's just run it back again. What's this one then? You've already done the let's run it back one more time. What are we doing it again? One more for the road, Glenn. That's what's going on here. Anyway, overall, really strong week for AEW. It feels like the positive vibes are just building and building as the weeks go on. It's less of a, oh look, the product's actually half decent now, the building stuff, and it feels like we're in a hot era that is really firing on all cylinders week after week, giving you reasons to properly check out every single time. Like every week they're delivering something big. We'll see what they can keep up on the road to Revolution, but that you're genuinely, they are absolutely firing. Because I talked about how, oh, I wonder when the honeymoon period is going to kind of wear off, because I was properly enjoying AEW throughout the second half of 2025, but I wasn't seeing an exact similar sentiment across the board from others whose opinions I do respect, I do listen to. But then this has happened, and then maybe with me, maybe I was in my honeymoon period after properly enjoying covering wrestling, a product I was genuinely having fun watching. But then they've entered a hot period where they are hitting. So it's like my honeymoon period has never stopped. It's just carried on straight through into this era, which I'm thoroughly enjoying. I've got notes about certain things, but because they are firing, they currently have trust creatively from me, whatever that means. Whatever that means in terms of, oh, you could break it or whatever. They have put a very heavy stipulation on the main event of Revolution. It's a big swing at a time where they are firing, and something this big could rock the boat quite a lot. There are a lot of Hangman fans who'd be very unhappy if he loses. Like, it's a big stipulation. Anyway, I've already gone on too long because there were quite a few big things to talk about this week, because I do try and focus on what the show is actually trying to tell you or trying to do or present or whatever. So sometimes there isn't that much to talk about really. But this week, these were big swings set up this week. One of them very positive on no questions asked for the Swerve stuff. Hangman Page, possibly positive, but lots of questions. Like, well, what are you doing here, Tony? Kind of like, we'll see. Anyway, that does bring me to the end of the review. Thank you for listening, liking, engaging in any way. Always appreciated, never take it for granted. I'll be back this time next week to continue talking about AEW as they build to a revolution. We've still got a few weeks to go. We've got the final week of February, and then I think we've got two more in March. So we've got a fair bit of time to bubble these stories still. They have been really well paced so far, so I'm quite interested to see what they've got figured out for the remaining weeks, especially for the Hangman Page and MJF things. Like, you've got like 3 weeks of television still to convince me of this. So anyway, I will see you all next week. With that, I say thank you, and I bid you adieu. Ta-va, duckies. Ta-va.
Thank you for calling the Bombas Comfort Line. Bombas make socks, slippers, tees, and underwear made with the highest quality materials. Press 1 for comfort, 2 for style, 3 for donation.
You chose style. Bombas is styles for whatever you enjoy. You can run in Bombas, lounge in Bombas, dress them up, dress them down, but always give back in Bombas. Because with every item purchased, another is donated. Bombas, comfort worth calling for. Go to bombas.com/audio and use code AUDIO for 20% off your first purchase. That's BOMBAS.com and use code AUDIO.